Abanigani, everyone. This is Professor Amin-Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, former city councilman for the city of Compton and former Compton College Board of Trustees as a former Compton Unified School District Board of Trustees. We want to welcome you here to the Conscious Corner, Black Conscious Corner, where we discuss critical issues that affect Black people worldwide. From a Pan-Africanist standpoint. And we do deep thinking and we raise critical questions and we are serious about looking for solutions and bringing to the attention to the people what's going on in our communities and within our network and within our global challenges. Tonight we have an excellent guest, a brother that has paid his dues as a probation officer, as far as, and also as an activist in the community. And he's part of a network that decided to do something about Black youth empowerment. And they are winning the hearts and minds of the young youth that they serve. And that's what we all have to do from birth. We have to continue to win the hearts and minds of our children. Brother Ijao is one of the most critical leaders that we had at Cal State Long Beach. There, I say critical, I mean, person that made decisions and a person that was a BSU president and also a Black Student Union president. And a brother that has paid his dues. He grew up in the hood, know the young people, and he wanted to do something about it. So tonight we're going to be discussing the Black Empowerment Breakfast that they're going to be having, along with the mayor of Long Beach. And he's going to tell us about that and about the organization and how they're serving you and transforming youth lives. So without further delay, we're going to Brother Ijao, formerly Lionel Henson, is getting ready to give us a rundown on the organization, its history, and goals and objectives, accomplishments and achievements, and what they offer as a solution to Black male youth issues and Black youth period issues. So Brother Lionel, before we get started, I want to say that we got Brother Ernest McBride, who is a curator and historian of his father's legacy. Ernest McBride Sr., longtime civil rights activist and human rights activist out of the city of Long Beach, where he's duly recognized for his, not only him, but his whole family. It's an institution in Long Beach. Very few people go through Long Beach don't know about the McBrides. And then we have Brother Rashiki Maskani, who is the founder of the Community Education Network, a Zoom cast and educational cast program that we have, and he's the one that provides us a platform, the Black Conscious Corner, on Tuesday, whereas he discussed issues on Wednesday, and he'll tell you more about that as we conclude, but without further delay. Is anybody else on, Roger D? Besides Ernest?
That's it for right now.
All right, then. We're going to go ahead. Brother Lionel, take it up. Take it off.
Okay. Thank you, Professor Ra, Brother Rashiki, Brother McBride. I'm happy to be a part of this podcast today with Each One, Teach One. And I just want to basically go over the organization. It's called In His Image, In Him Ministry, which means In His Image, men's ministry. And it's a ministry that my pastor, fraternity brother, Brother Welton Pleasant, has a church, the oldest Black church in Long Beach, oldest Black Baptist church called Christ Second Baptist Church in Long Beach. And you know they call Second Baptist because the white folks wouldn't let them in. And, you know, the white folks call it the First Baptist. Black folks came in to call it the Second Baptist. So we always been second to the white folks. But
Okay.
one thing about it is I enjoy the fact that this brother's progressive, and he saw fit. He saw a need for someone to step up and to be a part of this ministry. In his image means ministry, and in him means in his image, being an image of God. We all operating in the image of God. And the purpose of our organization, In His Image Men's Ministry, is to support and uplift men in the church and in the community to walk and carry themselves in the image of God through monthly fellowships, spiritual enlightenment, men's circles, empowerment conferences, empowerment breakfasts, networks, networking with other community-based organizations. We work with 100 Black Men in Long Beach. You know, as you know, some of you brothers know I'm a part of an organization called Black Men Build. Black Men Build supports this ministry by providing literature and information to empower Black men. Then, of course, fraternities. I'm a member of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated. And we have a nonprofit, other nonprofit organizations and cultural programs, et cetera. The church, our program, we also provide food programs, youth and young adult activities, spiritual growth and development, also housing support, mental health programs, and counseling. Just to give you an idea of the organization I'm a part of, that I'm now the director of, I took leadership in that position as of January 1st of this year. So our goal, my goal, is to diversify and just to continue to strengthen the organization, the church, and the ministry, and to bring more Black men, young and old, into the realms of the righteousness community activities.
So where is the church located?
The church is located at 1471 Martin Luther King Avenue, right there on Martin Luther King. Used to be called California Street.
Yeah.
It's now called Martin Luther King, right there on Martin Luther King off of Anaheim. 1471 Martin Luther King Boulevard, Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Okay, on 14th Street.
14th, yes.
What's the name of the church?
Second Baptist Church. Second Baptist Church.
Okay, thank
Remember
you.
Remember, the first Baptist was the white folks, and they didn't want to let us in. So that's why we got a Second Baptist.
Okay, right. Well, that's really right around the corner from Ernest's house.
Oh, is that right?
Ernest, his father's former house.
Yeah, that was my whole family's church. My mother joined the church 14 years old in 19. No, my grandfather in 1923.
Yes, sir.
And my mother in 1924. So
wasn't there with Reverend Healy?
58. Yeah.
Yeah, we just celebrated 114 years. 114 years we just celebrated.
Yeah, I think Reverend Ely used to be there, right?
Who?
Right.
Reverend Ely.
Ely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, all right. Tell us about the breakfast program you got going.
Yeah, this is going to be the something that I, vision was given to me to bring in political action and education, because there were so many of our young men who are struggling with mental health issues. And so I want the title of that's the Men's Empowerment Breakfast, to empower men to gain knowledge and information on how to address mental health, depression, suicide, and other aspects of self-destructive behavior. So our Men's Empowerment Conference is taking place on May 2nd, 9 a.m. at Christ Second Baptist Church. We're going to have the mayor of Long Beach, Mayor Rex Richardson, who's going to be speaking.
Excuse me, Roger Key. Roger Key, are you there? Go ahead, Lonnie. I'll be right there. I got
yes.
Would you, would you take over? I got to answer the door. Nobody.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I get Brother Rasha Key, you're showing the website of the church right now. Can you put up the event that's going to take place?
I'll do that in a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll put it up in a minute.
But yeah, one of the vision that I had was, like I said, we're losing so many young black men to suicide. So many young black men being depressed. I got mental illness and sick and trying to find ways to cope with it, but they're not finding the correct ways. So they're finding ways to self-medicate. They're finding having anger issues, propensity for violence and criminal activity. And as a lot of you brothers and sisters know, that I always stood for my community and always stood to make a positive impact in the lives of young people. So when I became a part of the director of this particular ministry, I wanted to do something more than just meeting it with the men of the church and let's take it further out into the community. We do provide food giveaways on Friday and clothing giveaways and things of that nature, but we really weren't connecting like we could in a better way. So the men's empowerment breakfast, it took me a lot to, I had to press to get that mayor there. Mayor Rex Richardson has a busy schedule, but he did commit to come, and he's going to speak on political action and on small business opportunities within the city of Long Beach, because the city of Long Beach is growing tremendously. There's a lot of opportunities for minority business. You know, one of the main things that he was able to help bring to was Nipsey Hussle's restaurant. I just opened a hamburger joint in Long Beach. And so that's one of the things. And he wants to help bring more of our people, small business, into Long Beach. And then we have a brother who's going to be speaking. He's a marriage and family therapist, brother by the name of John Hobbs. He's also a member of my fraternity, Omega Psi Phi. And he's going to talk about mental health, depression, and suicide, and ways that we as black men can better cope to deal with those issues in our lives.
Yeah. Well, you know, the word suicide means one who kills self. Homicide means somebody else killed you. And genocide means an allegation of active war. You know, one of the most atrocious crimes against humanity. But let me just say this. Most studies show that young African-American men and women kill themselves at an early age or commit suicide at an earlier age than most whites. And then there may be some drug involvement too, but the point is that self-medication and how did y'all get into the concern for suicide, and what do y'all mean by black empowerment?
Well, first of all, suicide has been impacting around my circle of people quite regularly. It seemed like every time I was talking to a brother or sister in some capacity in other ways, they had experienced loss of relative, a loved one, a friend, or someone. And then even my youngest brother, one of his old girlfriends, she had a son who was working, doing well, working as a longshoreman, and he committed suicide. He was in his 20s. So at that point, I just said, you know, we need to do something more about this. We need to empower our men to take a stand, to wake up and start making a difference in the lives of these young people, reach out to them, touch them, encourage them, and let them know that their life is not over. I use the scripture there, 1 Corinthians 16:13, which talks about being watchful. So we have to be watchful. We have to pay attention to what's going on in our community, and we have to stand firm in our faith, stand firm in our spirituality, believing that we can make it through whatever. Our people, our ancestors have faith. That's what brought them through, faith in themselves, their family, and in God that created to bring them through this terrific time. So we have to be watchful. We have to stand strong. And we have to we have to act like men. There's so many men. I work within a school district also, you know, Professor Raw. See so many young boys coming in with feminine behaviors and not being manly. And then they're being so coddled by the single moms and no father in their lives. So be not only be watchful, not only stand firm in our faith, in our spirituality, in our growth, in our self-determination, but we got to act like men. And to act like men, we got to be strong. We don't scratch when we don't itch. We don't bend and buck when ain't no need to be bucking. We need to be standing up, standing strong like men. And that was my charge to the men of the church, to stand, to be strong and act like men and stop ducking behind corners. We got plenty of women always in the movement, even back in the Black Student Union. When I first came into the folds, there was sisters running everything, leading everything, and there's no men. And it was like, well, we need to have some men. It's time for men to stand up. So this was the vision that I came up, you know, and the pastor supported it, to have a men's empowerment breakfast. On this day, like I forestated, I got the mayor. He confirmed that he would come. And then the other brother, John Hobbs, to talk about mental health. He just got his license in marriage and family therapist, but he's been a mental health specialist for several years.
All right. Ernest, you have any questions?
No, I was kind of unaware that the suicide rate was up among our youth. So I'm kind of out of the loop on a lot of the stuff, because that's why I joined this program, because I'm a full-time caregiver for my wife because she's down. And most of my time is just here at home by her bedside. So, you know, I don't really get out and even going to church, because I used to get to, when she was well, my sister and I used to go every Sunday morning, you know, when Pastor Pleasant first became minister there.
Yes, sir.
We'd be there every Sunday morning, but then now it's just, you know, I can't get the time to go because I can't get a babysitter here to look after her. So that kind of keeps me on the sideline. So, and then most of my friends, because I've been a member of that church, like I say, my grandfather joined it in 1923, and my mother in 24, and then I was baptized in 58. And my sister, I think, was baptized about 55, somewhere along in there. But, you know, our whole family has been members of that church. And so
it's been connected, yes.
But that's kind of really get over there is tough now, you know, because my sister came down ill with dementia. And so I couldn't really, she got to the point where I couldn't take her. And then my wife got down with it, so then now I'm kind of at home. So, but I try to get over there when I can and do what I can, you know.
Well, Brother McBride, I just want to let you know that now you can also pick up the program on Zoom. We're on Zoom and on YouTube every Sunday. You can pick up the program at 9:45.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, because I was just telling my granddaughter, hey, I'm going to start, because I never thought about doing that, you know.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes,
I was just talking to her about that, yeah.
Well, you know, brother, if you can get on this one, you can get on that one, brother, and then be right at home, because a lot of people cannot make it. They will get on there. So, you know, you're definitely welcome, brother.
Okay. Roger Key?
Because my brother kind of the same as me. We kind of got away because we moved out in Lakewood, but everything we do is in Long Beach, you know. So it's kind of tough, but that Zoom, that'll be a good idea to start getting on that. Yeah.
Yes, sir, brother. Yes, sir.
Roger Key, you have any questions?
Yeah, I want to get the information about Black Men Build, because I know brother was telling me that they moved. So the new location for the men's circle.
Yeah,
Black Men's Build.
Yeah, Black Men Build. I don't know if you brothers know about that, but I know some of you. I know Brother Ahi, he's on. He knows about it, and you've been to some of the men's circles. But Black Men Build is a very special organization. I was one of the instrumental forces to bring it to L.A., to Los Angeles. We have hubs in Miami and other parts, New York and other parts of the country. but I was one of the first nine to help to bring it to Los Angeles, because we felt like there was a need for Black Men Build to be in Los Angeles. And Black Men Build is an organization. And one of the things that was important to me was the men's circle. It was important where men can come together and talk about issues that they face in a judgment-free zone, young and old. And even with this In Him, In His Image men's ministry, I brought in men's circles now to the ministry here at the church, where men now come in a circle. We meet once a quarter. With Black Men Build, we meet with our men's circle every first Saturday of the month. It's in Los Angeles on Jefferson. I can pull up the address and get it to you. And Professor Roy been asking me about getting someone from Black Men Build to come and speak. And I'm still working on that, Brother Raw. Okay. We have new leadership, and I spoke to the brother. New, he was down for it, but he just hasn't came given a committed date yet. But nope. If anybody wants to know more about Black Men Build, you can feel free to reach out to me at 310-902-2212, and I can get you more information about Black Men Build. But it's an organization of all Black men who come together once a month in a men's circle to talk about issues that affect our community on a day-to-day basis. And
all right. Brother Mashinda? Brother Mashinda?
Yo, good evening. No, okay. I don't have any questions at this time.
But Brother Mashinda, is there an update on the brother that killed all his family members and stuff out there in Louisiana?
No, just like the brother said, mental illness is rampant, and brother, you know, it goes unchecked, you know, and you know, he didn't check in early enough to get help for himself, you know. So, I mean, that's obvious, you know. You kill up, you know, little babies, you know, 1 to 14 years old, seven of your own children, and shoot the mama and friends or family, whoever. You know, so just it's part of that mental illness topic that's being discussed. And so I commend the brother again. I've heard him come on before. And yeah, it's definitely, you know, something that's needed to try to, you know, uplift the brothers, especially in the communities, you know. So but no, it's nothing new right now. It's still under, you know, investigation and things like that. There's another guy that I think they're investigating or looking for, arrested. I'm not sure if they picked him up yet, but somebody, in terms of the weapon and that was used and things like that. So it's an accomplice involved, I believe, or, you know, somebody, you know, and I don't know all the details of the involvement, but somebody else has been named in it as well, like assist. Now, I don't know if he didn't assist in the killing, like, directly, but he's involved in some kind of way. But but anytime we got somebody, you know, on the planet that's, you know, supporting our communities and any capacity, you know, I applaud it and appreciate it.
Okay. Well, keep us updated on that. Brother Diabetes, Darryl Grayson, you there? Diabetes, are you there? All right. Ivy?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good evening, brothers. Oh, that's all right. Go ahead, brother Diabetes.
I'm sorry about that. My voice is not so great, but no, I don't have any questions. I just came on to support my brother. I got the text. I was actually involved in another meeting, but I just switched over so I could, you know, show some love and appreciate what my brother's doing. Still active in the community, strong. And I just want to say, I appreciate you. And Amin Ra, Brother Ijao, you know, it's good to see both of you. And, you know, thank you for all the work that you guys are doing in the struggle.
And thank you for all your work, brother.
Thank you, brother.
You know, you one of our heroes, brother.
Yeah. It was a team, brother. You know, it's a team effort. We've been by ourselves, never, brother. Yeah. So it does my heart good to see you, brother.
Yeah,
sir.
to hear from him, you know, and glad you're recovering from that incident, and that you sound great. And we give you and your family warm greetings from the Black Conscious Corner, and as well as from Community Education Network, brother. And you know, we're gonna get you when you feel up to it, you know, because you've always had outstanding programs for young people with regards to when you were with BET and on your own company. So we're gonna get back with you, brother, that meeting.
I appreciate that. And I just want to say another reason why I want to support my brothers. You talk about what I'm doing. I just want people to know that Hijau was one of the main people, one of the first people, one of the most consistent people to support what I was doing. You know, even when I didn't ask him to, he was always out there, you know, kind of representing the work that I was doing and, you know, being a megaphone for what we was trying to do. So, you know, the brothers standing strong.
Well, I still remember that Kwanzaa event we had at your house, brother, when you had dances out in your yard, and it was just packed, and it was just a beautiful thing, brother. That was just excellent, brother. Let me get to Brother Ahi. Ahi, you want to say something?
Yeah, I just like to say, boy, I'm really excited and happy to be here amongst us powerful brothers. And as Yigal said, last weekend my son and I we went to the Black Man Build meeting. Sister opened a
Outstanding.
bookstore here on the west side of Detroit,
Outstanding, brother.
and he you know, I wanted my son to experience that, be around people of the same ilk, and man, he really had a good time. A lot of sisters were having a business meeting beforehand, and so we never really got into the circle last week. So they made the move this evening, and it's kind of challenging sometimes because the meeting usually happens on Tuesdays here in Detroit. And so it happens at 6 o'clock, and then the podcast here happens at 9 here, Detroit time. So it's you have to kind of be kind of nimble on your feet, flexible. We had a wonderful time last weekend, and Brother Sloan really put it together. And I did talk to him about appearing on this podcast, and he has agreed. I just have to make the arrangements for him to get in touch with Rasha Key and make an arrangement for that. But on this suicide thing is permeates through our community. As Brother Giles said, we all are touched by this. And I, off the top of my head, I can name three individuals in my family and people who are very close to me that did this. I wanted to know, brother, when you when dealing with these people, how do you assess people who are candidates for counseling or support groups that will help deter this type of behavior? And we also know that what are the well, I know the internet is a big deal now. People really just crave other folks' approval and the thumbs up and please watch me kind of deal. And also the information, other information that we pull in, what areas that influence our decision making should we be trying to counter or look at to help our young people steer clear of this desire to end their lives.
Brother, I appreciate what you're saying, and I just what first thing came to my mind was we have to be good listeners. We have to listen to what's going on, what our young people are saying, And we, you know, a lot of times we tend to interject and not give them a voice, but we have to be open to listen and receive, no matter how angry they are, no matter how frustrated they are, no matter how much slang they're using or how much animation. But we have to take the time out to step back and just listen to them. And then listen to them, we'll begin to understand what they're going through. And that's one of the things about the men's circle, is listening to each other. A lot of times as elders, we don't want to hear what our young people are saying, and they butt in, or they feel like their voice is not being heard. You know, young people are going through a lot out here in the streets. And like you say, the social media is playing a big part. The cyberbullying and that type of thing going on, where they feel like if someone on a social media platform tell them they're not worth anything, they believe it because someone else said it. And so what we have to do is we have to encourage them, first of all, to believe in themselves and to have positive self-esteem and embrace them, circle around them, no matter what they're going through, and let them know there's help and find help for them. There's resources out there, but we have to encourage them to take advantage of those resources. Perfect example for me, brothers, a lot of you may or may not know that I was a victim of a violent crime when I was shot back in July of 2020 by a gentleman, a young man, 21 years old, attempting to rob me and shot me in my left side of my hip. And after I have three screws put into my body, I was on a wheelchair for 6 months, on a walker for 6 months, and then on a cane. But through God's grace and mercy, I've been able to overcome that. But I did not give up on my young brothers and sisters. And a fraternity brother of mine told me, he said, what I needed to do was get some therapy. That was the first thing I did. When he told me that, I listened to him because the brother loved me, cared about me. And he said, look, don't take this lightly, because we all go through something. Get you some mental therapy. And I met a sister, and we went through 6 months of counseling for me to break down and release everything that I was going through and my anger. See, a lot of us are just angry, brother. We're angry about what turns of life that's happened to us. And we just hold it in. But as men, we got to be able to talk to each other. And that's what I push transparently, no matter what. Get it off your chest. There's no judgment. We're in a judgment-free zone. And I get emotional about it because I still endure it, and I see so many of my people out here still facing it every day. So we got to make a difference. We got to be open and willing and love on each other and support each other no matter what. Let them young brothers know that you care about them. Give them a hug, brother. Sometimes they ain't never get a hug. They ain't get no hug at home. They ain't get no love at home. Just grab them and just hug them and say, brother, I love you. It's going to be okay. And that means a whole lot. But you got to listen to them. You got to listen to what they're enduring, what they're going through, and then allow them to have a voice. And then give them the support that they need. Offer them some opportunities. If it's nothing but sitting down having lunch with them or sitting down talking to them, whatever the case may be, we have to talk to each other and talk through this thing to help them get through it. That's initially, we got to listen. We got to listen to them and listen to where they're at to reach
them. Okay. Well, you know, right now, there are different challenges in dealing with young people. Most people that young people that are people that have decided they're going to take their life, they generally don't talk to nobody. And it could be a person that you don't know is going through changes because they, you know, they're pro athletes, they are star high school players or whatever, and they choose to end their life, but they really didn't discuss. Then there are others that you can see have a depression, a loner, and a person that is just. Look like they need a friend, need somebody to talk to them, just to bring them out their shell. and you know, let them know it's okay to be comfortable. But you know, you raised an issue about the femininity. I think Robert Staples, I remember Thibodeau and all of us, we had Robert Staples at Long Beach State. And he had wrote a book about the demasculinity of the black male. And you see these pro athletes with more jewelry on than women.
Mm-hmm.
And you see them with their hair longer than the women. They're even wearing pigtails.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A lot of that may be associated with, and I don't know them, but a lot of these young men are being raised by women only. And Dr. Rutherford was talking about when we had him on about how certain women treat their sons like they're their husbands, and then at the same time braid their hair and tell them to get an earring. And you know, you got kids giving their daddies earrings, gold earrings and studs for gifts. And some of the men are putting the earrings in their ear, which, you know, well, and I'm not saying everybody to do that as a problem, you know, but I am saying that we see more of it with regards to the femininity demonstrated, femininity tendencies being demonstrated by our actors, our entertainers that's on TV, and athletes, and entertainers, actors, singers, you know, and sometimes it gives the youth a wrong message as far as being strong and as far as keeping a sense of masculinity. Not only physically, but mentally, and that challenge. How do you respond to that?
Well, it's really a tough dilemma when it comes down to it, brother. Because, like I say, I'm in the school system every day, and I always seem like every class I'm in, there's at least one feminine acting male in there. Always at least one, sometimes more than that. But I have to just continue to be a positive example as a man. And you know, that's where it starts. They don't have positive examples of men in their lives. And if whatever we can do through organizations, we're involved in youth leadership conferences and things of that nature. We bring in young men of all ages to programs and activities to teach them, get them training and uplift for understanding on how they should carry themselves in day-to-day life. So we have to just continue to reach out. And we know this ain't gonna change overnight because it's by design. The system, society, is a part of gender. If boys are getting together with boys, they're not gonna be procreating with women. And you know, in our community, the birth rate is down to like minuscule. Our sisters are not even having babies anymore because they're falling on their own careers and not wanting to have children and put up with all of that. And then we have the issue with men and running around here not being men, not stepping up to the plate, not being responsible. We got domestic violence. We got so many challenges. And we can just take them one at a time. And, you know, we don't have much time. But that's what we got to do. We got to take it one step at a time. And like I say, this mental health, depression, and suicide is the area that I chose to lend my support and to step into the plate, not only within the church, but also within my community, within society as a whole, wherever I'm at, we can make that difference. And that's where it starts.
Yeah, but see, we have a challenge when it comes to trying to deal with young black males or just males, period, or brothers. You know, when me and Ernest was coming up, one of the measurements of manhood was to be married and have children and take care of your wife and your family.
Mm-hmm.
You have a generation of males that don't even look at women to marry.
Yeah,
it's like that old concept that women were made to reproduce, but men were made to love. And you have, you know, even in the gang activities, you know, a lot of this came from the European influence on us. The gay movement and the gay right movement, and I ain't saying people don't have the right to be gay, and that's it. I ain't saying beat them and kill them, because the best cure to any problem is prevention. Mm-hmm. But from a strategic standpoint, we have to teach heterosexuality for the same reason you just talked about, having children. And you don't have to have a bunch of them, but at least having children, raising them for the continuation of our struggle and the continuation of our legacy as parents and as men. And you know, we used to say, go to the army to make a man out of you. We used to, there was all kind of ways in which manhood was stressed. There was character in manhood. Matter of fact, we really had issues with gay people when we was coming up. We didn't think that they were worthy of being around us and things of this nature. But now, all on TV, almost every black newscaster, he'll tell you, "Wow, you know, I was with my husband." And you say, "Wow," you know, especially on CNN and MS. Almost all the men on MS now is got a husband, and there are women that need a husband. You know, two men cannot make a baby. Now they can adopt a baby, but they can't. They sure can't procreate, you understand? And so the issue is that part of the black movement is to reestablish the masculinity within the black male and the thoughtfulness and vision that he had for himself. You know, that you got men at an early age dressing up like girls. Trying on their girl clothes and stuff. So what I'm asking you is, when you look at suicide and the challenges of working with black suicide, Queen Mother Moore called it oppression psychoneurosis, whereas oppression sometimes when society beats limits your ability to function in that society. In other words, when you're a young man and you don't think you can get no further than you are going to be at 16, for whatever reason, you didn't go to school, you didn't want to do the work in school, you just, there's too much work to be a man and be grown, too much responsibility, it's too overwhelming. And you go into a deep funk and you say, "I don't want to go no more." You understand? Once you realize that death is inevitable, why wait till I get old and die? I kill myself now. You understand? I don't want to go through a life knowing that I'm not going to get out of life alive. You understand? I mean, I'm not going to be here forever. And sometimes that's depression to people. How do you respond to those things?
Well, I think the first thing that came to my mind was the fact that our ancestors, they didn't give up. I mean, some did, but we are the strongest of the strong. Mm-hmm. Those of us that are still here is because of our ancestors fought through hatred, racism, murder, attempted murder, and still kept on pressing. And I think that's the spirit that we got to encourage in them, a sense of cultural self-identity and determination to know that they come from greatness because the schools are not promoting accuracy. If you look at the president that y'all elected, he not. promoting anything that provides a sense of self-determining culture of who we are as a people. Matter of fact, he want to do everything that he can to try to eliminate it. So we got to do everything that we can to carry it on. We got to be proud. We got to stand strong on who we are and where we come from as a people.
Diabetes, you had the luxury of being on the East Coast and the West Coast. And when Washington, D.C. was packed with immigrant Black people and Black men, how do you see it? Is there a difference in East Coast youth and West Coast youth and the issues that they face on the East Coast? I know weather's one, but the other issues over there, like, because there's a high rate of challenges. The projects in Chicago and D.C., they straight up and straight down versus the ones that are out here spread out. And things of this nature. But when in your travels and in your experience of being on the East Coast for a long time, did you see any challenges that were different from the West Coast?
Well, it's interesting that actually there's a lot of similarities across the country, and probably less so, you know, years ago when I was on the East Coast and now. And the reason now is because of the internet and social media and the ability to, create national trends where LA, Chicago, New York, DC are following, you know, the same cultural trends and receiving the same information. So now I think people tend to think more similarly than before. But in terms of conditions, you know, I would say the thing about LA is that, you know, LA had an interesting gang tradition that was kind of unique. There's gangs all across the country, but LA, I think, was influenced, you know, in a different way through gang culture than other communities. I think that had a large impact. I think the, you know, people kind of talk about in a humorous way weather, but weather is very significant in culture and how people, you know, interact and communicate. And I used to say this all the time when I first moved to DC, you know, you wouldn't think it would have such a great impact. But when you think about the seasons and you think about cold weather, you know, there's less opportunity to kind of hang out, to loiter, you know, to be outside in cold weather. In LA, you know, the weather kind of dictates what you will and will not do, what you can and cannot do. So it does have an impact, actually. I think that the projects in, you know, when you talk about Chicago, for example, or Detroit, or even New York, in some communities in New York, whether it's the Bronx or Queens or Brooklyn, does tend to be different than LA. And I think a lot of people that I know who come to LA and they talk about, you know, Watts, for example, or Compton, and their perception of it, you know, from media and from, you know, peers and people who they know who have been there, you know, as being bad when they come here and, you know, they see manicured lawns and nice houses and they may not think they're in the hood. And you go to, for example, DC, you go to Southeast and you go to some of the projects in Southeast, it looks very different. But you can also go, you know, 10, 15 miles up the road to Prince George's County and, you know, see it's the suburbs, but it's, you know, it's 10, 15 minutes from DC. And you get the same type of, you know, look that you might have in LA. So I just think that in general, I think run-ins interactions with young people in DC that I've had in LA. In some ways, even though people have that perception of LA as being, when they see it, being a nice community, in a lot of ways, it can be rougher in LA, even with that look, than it can be in other communities. And people kind of miss that. So I think in general, I think that you can approach things from a national standpoint these days and see some of the same problems. Unique in some ways, to that particular area, but in general, very similar. For example, I used to talk about this a lot when you compare DC and LA. Very different and at the same time, the same. Different in terms of, the dense populations inside the city, supposedly sparse, but if you take the industries that influence culture in LA, and you take the industries that influence culture in DC, both of them have very large, a very prominent, cultures that impact how people think. One in LA is entertainment. It's very entertainment influenced. And DC is very politics influenced. So everybody wants to gravitate toward in LA entertainment. And it's about celebrities and who you know in Hollywood. Those of us who grew up here, in, communities where it's a large black population, not so much, but people gravitate to LA. That's what they think of. They think of Hollywood. You gravitate to DC, and it's also an area that's very transient. So you have people from Detroit, from the Carolinas, from Philadelphia, from Virginia, Ohio. It's a lot of transient. And plus, because it's politics, people coming in and out with different administrations politically. But nevertheless, everybody is trying to, get next to power from a political standpoint. So it largely influences how people act and how people think. I give an example. I give an example. And Ijao knows because he came to visit a few times in D.C. And I think Hobbs was living there, right? Ijao, at one point, I remember how going to Hobbs's house one time. But we go to clubs. It's funny because people who come to clubs, in DC, and brother might be in a three-piece suit with a briefcase, walking around handing out business cards, in the club. You're not gonna see that in Los Angeles. So, it's unique in a sense, but at the same time, very similar.
Well, yeah,
Professor Rob, excuse me. Barry's on the line and he wanted to say a few things. Professor Rob, what's that?
No, go ahead. You got Barry on the line?
Yeah, Barry? You guys hear him?
Nope.
No.
Barry, say something so he can see if they can.
Very nice.
Tell him to speak into the mic.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello,
Hello. Okay, we hear you
hello.
now.
Hello. Okay. Hey, man, I just wanted to say I really appreciate the conversation from Brother Ijaw and Brother Thibidi and, part of the Jamaatu family of Long Beach State. And I am grateful for it and had the opportunity to live back there in DC. And the points that Thibidi was making is really true. There's a lot of similarities and some things a lot different. Because I know the first thing for me was tripping off of that still in those areas of DC and other parts of Maryland, in PG County and those places where, you go places and you go down the neighborhoods and you see all these black people in homes and you go to businesses and black people are working. And that was a big difference for me from LA because you just didn't really see that all the time. you know, and it was different, and the weather does dictate it, because when it was cold, you ain't trying to be out there like that. But in them humid nights when it's still 80 degrees at 2 or 3 in the morning, hanging out in Adam Morgan, it's a whole different thing. And it's but so it's different, but very similar. And I just wanted just to say too, I respect and appreciate the work that Brother E. Giles put in, and I'm real careful to say, I never thought like BD or E. Giles say they like my brothers. There ain't nothing being like my brothers. They are my brothers, and we earned that right to be that to each other. And it's a thing, but I appreciate the work that E. Giles doing, and I really respect his resolve after all the things that he had to go through, and the repopulation of the young people that he out here, you know, working hard every day to save. And, you know, they'd have to, you know, stare them down, you know, and but that's what the mission is, and that is what the work that we have to do. And it's, like he was saying, it's not easy. And Professor Ross said, some young people think, hey, well, you ain't going to get out of life alive anyway, so what the difference do it make? Yeah, I've heard some young people say those things, you know, but E. Giles said that we are the strongest of the strong, because the reality is we were able to persevere from those ancestors that made it through. And, you know, so we deal with those challenges and we greet those challenges, and we just have to take them on and do what we have to do to make it better, you know, is to keep moving the needle. And as Rasta Key always says, it's each one teach one, each one reach one. And it's really that way. And I just want to say how much I respect the work of Brother Joe, and I respect mixed with my brother Thibe, and especially the breakdown, because see, you know, when we used to go back there to hang out with him before I moved there, and when I moved there, I lived with him and his family, and it was quite an awakening for me, you know, and to learn the different ins and outs of things of how the city worker taking me to Florida Avenue Grill, and like, wow, man, this is just different. It was similarities, but yeah, a lot different, but very similar. And I just think that it just lets us know where our people are at and where we can, what we still got to do. And as Brother Jal used to say to me, we got to go meet our people where they at. And as Dr. Rain used to say, we got to go meet them where they at to help lead them to where they got to be. Mm. And we can't expect them to come to us. We got to do that. And his life, that being his life, we live in testaments to that. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know no other way. You know, is it always easy? Nope. But once my grandfather used to tell me, he said, see, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, boy. What's that? He said, the easiest way is not always the best way.
Mm.
Because you miss a lot of lessons that way. And you think you know, and you really don't. And I'm like, oh, you know, and I those words ring true to me today, because of so many things that I have to persevere in. But I get it. I really do. And it keeps me going every day. So I just want to let y'all know how appreciative I am. And I thank you all for the people and the men you turn out to be, and for the lives that you impacted. And with the work, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with Brother Thibe when we get him back on the podcast. I just want him to get a chance to talk about to tell me who I am, and you know, the audio video series for our children. It's an amazing thing for people who haven't seen it. They gotta watch it. It's a great teaching tool for the children.
Mm.
So thank you all,
positive, brother. Kid positive. You know, yes, I just speaking of that, it is so encouraging, because as you all may or may not know, I have a grandson that's 5 years old, and I make sure that he gets that positive reinforcement through the culture and through animation. So I want to say Santi Sana to you, Brother Thibe, for that work that you're doing, because it starts ingraining in the minds of our young people to know who they are and where they are supposed to go and the potential for their lives. So that's why I support you, brother, and I will always support you for that work, reaching back, getting them while they're young to save them, brothers. Getting them while they're young to save them.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Save from themselves. The biggest hard thing is saving people from themselves.
Yes, sir.
And, oh, right. It's so many issues. See, what both of y'all have done, you Barry and Diabetes and the people on here, is you took it upon yourself to try to come up with a solution to an issue that's affecting us. And that's, you know, most people, you know, they do things for money, they do things for this, for that. But you saw a problem, suicide and youth femininity and the need to develop stronger men and things of this nature, and diabetes with this automation of educating people about their culture through the arts and the creative programs that he has created through his business, and Barry working with all youth in program. And that's beautiful, because that's what we need. Because see, in the 60s, the two major issues were civil rights or black power empowerment or black power. Culture revolution, art revolution, a value revolution. It was really three issues: value, mindset, changing our values, fighting politically from without and culturally from within, and that, those transformations. But now we got all kind of issues that affect us, from HIV to COVID to police brutality, even on a national scale, thanks to Black Lives Matter. You got black adoption of children. You got, and to take on the suicide issue that we face and bring it to light, because a lot of people like just don't know that that's a problem. Like Brother Ernest was saying, well, hey, man, and I eat. Man, I didn't know that was a major issue, you know, and bringing it to light. You're not only helping the kids that you're helping, or the young people, to keep from a preventive standpoint, but you're educating other people to be watchful and realize to give more love to the person so they'll feel love, and so that feel that they are not alone and that they can get through life regardless of the challenges, as you were saying about what our ancestors went through. You know, so that's a beautiful thing, what you're doing. That's all the thing I'm saying. You want to make some more comments, Brother Lonnie?
I just wanted to read this information about the suicide rate among black males. Combination of systematic racism, socioeconomic stressors, mental health stigma, and lack of access to culturally competent care. Rising often underdiagnosed depression and anxiety fueled by experience of discrimination, financial hardship, and trauma disproportionately impact black men, with young men facing particularly high rates of suicide. And this is from USA Today. But socioeconomic stresses. I ain't got no money. I can't pay my bills. And then I got a racist system that don't like me, hate me anyway. And then we got mental health stigma that, you know, are they crazy? Are they crazy anyway? Look at them acting like animals. Look at them acting like they ain't got no sense. Or they must be out their mind. So it becomes acceptable thing in our community to accept the stigmas that society has placed on us, and then we go a lack of access to cultural competent care. What is that saying? We're not even getting care from our own people. We're going to white doctors. We're going to other physicians to get diagnosed of our issues, and they're giving it from a Eurocentric perspective. That's why we have to put more programming and more information out there to our own people that where people can relate to them based upon our day-to-day struggle. I'm very transparent when I talk to young people about what I've endured. And when I do that, Professor Raw, then I get their attention. They listen because they know that they're not by themselves. But we got to let them know that they're not by themselves. And what happens in a system, in a professional psychological model, they don't talk about their lives or their situation because can't nobody relate to their lives or their situation. They can't certainly relate to what that young person is going through, but we certainly can. So we've been through some of the same things that those young brothers have endured. And that's how you gotta let them know that they're not by themselves on what they've been through or what they're going through. You've been there. I've been there. And I've been doing it. And I didn't give up. So you got to give them a boost of encouragement to not give up. And it starts with knowing who you are. Tell me who I am. Let knowing where you came from. You come from greatness, no matter what that first generation that you see. But then we know we got 10 generations back of trauma that we haven't addressed as a people. So we got to go deeper, deeper, and deeper. But we can't let it break our spirits. Just know our past is what brought us to today. But it's today that take us to tomorrow, my brothers. Yeah. It's today that take us to tomorrow.
And that's why we need to educate, do more research on suicide, do more research on people that are just not productive with their self-development. Do more research on mental illness among the Black community. I remember William Guthrie's book, Even the Rats Were White. Meaning that all the psychological and what they would call pathologies tests they did with white rats and white rabbits because they were studying about what affects white people. But we got to realize that the same reason young brothers may take their life is not the same reason where a white boy take his. That's why I said we have a tendency to kill ourselves at a young age, and we feel more helpless at a young age, where the white boy get to be 30, 35, and he's not doing no better than an immigrant, not doing no better than a brother or sister that, you know, he think he's better than, and he gets depressed because, you know, they envy and one of the and greed are the two elements that really depress people. You know, your friend, your sister, who's 5 years younger than you, is doing better than you because she went to school, she got a job, she got her own apartment. Here you are still living on the couch with your mama. You understand, at your mama's house. So, and you have to go to your little sister to ask for some change. And that's some, you know, that could be some very depressing things. But like you said, we went through worse things than that. During the Holocaust of enslavement, the white man took all our manhood. We couldn't even defend our women. Our children that we bore was his. They put us in the barns with the animals. But some of us endured. You understand? And so we got to get that spirit into the people that, even though the dominant society is oppressing us, our struggle is the struggle for the next generation. That's what Martin Luther King said. I may not get there when you get there, but we will get to the promised land.
Right.
You know, and that mentality. So we're going to get some closing remarks. Brother Ernest, do you have any closing remarks? Ernest? You're on mute. Go ahead.
I'm unmuted now.
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything. I'm just kind of taking it all in, yeah, because I know, you know, I had a lot more. involvement in the community, like coming up, because when I ran a little youth track and field club and in the sports, and we had a lot of kids, and we, you know, kind of had my ear to the ground during that time. But then once I got out of the youth sports, and because I see a lot of kids now that, you know, that ran on our youth clubs, they got families and they got kids, you know, participating in sports. So I don't know now. And then I think this kind of rap culture seems to me kind of sent kids off in a wayward direction, you know. So I don't know, but like I didn't know Brother Henson there, the program they got, that really sounds good. Probably need more programs like that.
Okay. Brother Ahi, any closing remarks?
I'm thankful for this evening, brother, and you sharing information, and we need to embrace each other. Mental health is a lifelong journey and can be a struggle. Appreciate the help that I've gotten here, the fact that Rasha Key created this. A couple of years ago, you turned me on to this. Professor Rye calls me and to check on me and see what's happening here in the city. And that does wonders for me to be thought of and to be embraced and included in this circle. And so that's what we have to do with our young people, not only our young people, but all our people, our young men around us. We have to get back to embracing each other and get back to we instead of me. And so I appreciate you being here this evening, Brother Shaka, my brother. You know I love you. Barry and Rasha Key and Brother Ernest McBride, who never just seems to amaze me with just the history and all the knowledge and life lessons that you share here on the show. And I don't know if you remember me, the little giant, but you came here and it was all about the Uzo brother here in Detroit.
We was there in Detroit. He remembered.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a wonderful time, but thank you. Thank you for coming this evening. And I thank all the brothers on the show for what you do for me. And we need to exude this and reach out and let this beam cover all our young brothers out here and embrace each other. And I appreciate you. And I guess all until right. Tomorrow night, my people.
All right, Brother Diabetes, closing remark.
Again, I just want to say, you know, happy to be here. Happy to see everybody. And, you know, as usual, my brothers are strong in the struggle and doing positive things. So I just want to be here to support. I always want to see, you know, people still, you know, 50 years later, still in the struggle, that consistency, that persistence. You know, people drop out, you know, people find other things to do. And, you know, and some people, you know, when they committed to it, they meant it. And so I appreciate that.
Yeah, but they're coming out with a movie about W.E.B. Du Bois. Mm. And it's a black group that's doing it. A whole autobiography, all the way back to his youth and him coming up. You know, because he went through transformations himself.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
You know, he believed in the talented 10 and his theory that the top 10% of black intellectuals should lead the race, and whereas him and Garvey and their white light brother and dark brother arguments and not trusting each other. But then he ended up taking a Garvey stand and went to Africa, tore up his passport, and ended up dying in Africa. And so, you know, he was the first black to graduate from Harvard. You understand, African American. So when that come out, I'm going to make sure that we make that announcement. I forgot the date that they say.
Is that Green Apples?
But it's a W. Du Bois. Oh, how he got the B in his name. His mother was married to Burgard or something like that. And his name is William Edwards. And he added his mother's name, Boer. And that's where the B came, W-E-B, Du Bois. And it's very, very important. And Thibidi, you have an open invitation at all times to come and be on the show, talk about your program, or yes, invite your own guests. And you just, yes, know, you can share some of my time anytime, because you can pay so many dues, man. We can never repay you for writing that preamble to the Constitution, reorganizing the old BSU, developing a strategy for starting BSUs and other campuses. I can still have some of your paperwork, brother.
Is that right?
Yeah, man. That pledge, you gave us a quiapo for the BSU, a pledge. It's just a beautiful thing. You made a lot of contribution, brother, and it needs to be recognized. So anytime you can share time, my time. Roger Key, any closing remarks about tomorrow?
I just appreciate all you brothers, man. If it wasn't for y'all, I wouldn't be doing anything.
Well, you
appreciate
got
you all, man.
Well, you
this,
got
is, three alumni. This is a life's passion to be surrounded by brothers like y'all, and I'm gonna keep doing it.
Okay, good, brother. I appreciate it. You know, we all, me, Lionel, and Brother Darryl, we all graduates of Cal State Long Beach. You got folk alumni from the Black Conscious Movement, you know. So we'll be here with you, brother. That's what I'm saying. So what about tomorrow, Rasha Key?
So we got Brother Quabenar coming on, and he's going to talk about the NBA has no shame. He said they tripping and promoting stripping and et cetera. So he's always, he got his ear to the ground when these people are not doing right when it comes to representation in sports and entertainment. So can't wait for that. You're going to give us an update on what he's talking about. So that's what we have tomorrow.
All right. In case anybody was caring, Virginia did pass that redistricting for the Democratic Party, you know, so they can get more representatives to try to put a check on the madman. But so it did pass in Virginia, the redistricting, if you was keeping up with it. I just let you know about that.
You going to talk about that next week, Professor Ra?
Yeah, we can talk about that redistricting and the struggle. You know, like I said, our struggle is, we struggle out politically, inward culturally, values, ethics, moral consciousness, and we can go into that because the key crisis, as Maulana taught us back in the 60s, key crisis in Black life is a culture crisis. And as Malcolm said, we can have a bloodless revolution. All we have to do is change what we do. You know, instead change how we live and how we think. And we can talk about that next time. But we'll see. If I don't get Akili on or Black Lives Matter, we will be discussing the culture crisis. All right? Next Tuesday. All right.
Right.
All right.
Each one teach, one conscious corner.
All right, then.
Thank you all, brothers, for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to.
I'm sorry, y'all. You have closing remarks. I got ahead of myself.
It's all right, brother. I mean, you know, I respect my elders. I was raised that way, brother.
All right.
So it's all good. But I just wanted to know, just to say that this event, the Men's Empowerment Breakfast, will be taking place May 2nd. Saturday, May 2nd from 9 a.m. to 12 noon is free of charge. We have the M&M's and Carson is catering the breakfast. No hog, okay? And it's free. We ask that you just register on a QR code so we can keep a count. But if you don't register on a QR code, come anyway. Bring your woman, your man, your child. It's a family event.
But where's it going to be at?
Christ Second Baptist Church, 1471 Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, Long Beach, California, 9813.
And that's a Saturday?
Saturday, May 2nd.
All right.
First Saturday of May.
All right, Ernest. You hear it? Spread the word. I already shared it.
One more thing I just want to say regarding the Black church. A lot of our people don't want to go to the Black church, don't want to be a part of the Black church. But the Black church was provided a safe place for our people during the movement for organizing, strategizing, implementation for movements and self-determination. So we got to hold these churches accountable. And I'm just fortunate to be at a church that Black power is respected and represented. And so for that, we're a nation within a nation. So we got to keep carrying it on and not giving up, brothers. So Asante Sana to you all. And I'm here for any future pleasures that you may have that's progressive.
And you know, the Black church was our welfare system.
That's right.
As Dr. Kale would say, there was no welfare in the other day. In the back in our day, it was farewell. And the only people that we had, the Black church, was our sanctuary.
Sanctuary.
They were the abolitionists. Almost all of our leaders were ministers. You understand? You know, they came out of the tradition of the Black church. It may be the repatriation movement with Eric Blyden and those brothers back in the 1800s.
One thing I want to say, share this book with you, brothers and sisters. It's called Benjamin Crump, Worse Than a Lie. And you know what's worse than a lie? Is when you're telling the truth and nobody listening. That's what's worse than a lie.
Wow.
Tell the truth and nobody's listening.
I got to put that in the lecture. I love it.
Benjamin Crump, right, Worse Than a Lie.
I got to write a whole lecture on that now.
Yes, sir.
All right, then, brother. Next, tomorrow night, we're going to have an interesting discussion. If you got time, tune in. It's
Same time, Professor Rock. 6 o'clock.
Yes, Kwamenon is from Chicago, okay. And he helped lead the struggle when they made this movie about Black babies or something. I forget the name of it. Steph Curry co-sponsored it, and him and Brother Nationwide had demonstration at basketball games. I can't remember Rashiki, the name of the
The animated Good Times.
Good Times, and they had babies.
Yeah, the animated selling, one on Netflix.
Yeah, it was selling dope and doing all kind of stuff. And he's very active in Chicago with rap music, talking about the vulgarity and the bestiality and all the things that they're doing and how it's affecting our children. So. He's a very interesting brother, but a long-time activist out of the East Coast. So
Geronimo Pratt's nephew.
Jijaga. Yeah. All right. See y'all tomorrow, hopefully.
Thank you, Professor Ross. Santi Sana, everybody.
Each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.
I'm trying to make it to the breakfast too, brother.
Okay, we look forward to it, Professor Raw.
All right.
All right, Brother Mag.